This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Vizla Kumarasan.
And I'm Ahmad Fahd Rahmat.
This is Digital Desires. So this week, Fuad and I will be exploring a topic which was fairly new to the both of us. I think we had to do quite a bit of research to understand it. It is the practice of keeping receipts. Fuad, do you want to explain briefly what that means?
So where the receipts have become quite a common, I guess, phrase in online lingo now, basically it's evidence of interaction. Typically text, sometimes photos, but the idea is that you have, people have access to records of exchanges that they can refer to anytime there's a confusion or conflict. And screenshots will be taken of those exchanges, typically in a way to damage the person that they're disagreeing with or having a conflict with, right? So this could be anything from relationships to even, as everybody is familiar now, the Kanye and Taylor Swift rift.
Man, I can understand how it might be kind of hard to love a girl like me.
So this raises a lot of interesting questions.
Wait, before we go there, let's just rehash the whole Kanye, Taylor Swift tiff, right? So Kanye West, in his last album, he had a song called
Famous.
All myself sad that know me best. I feel like me and Taylor might still have sex. Why? I made that famous.
He very, you know, liberally referred to Taylor Swift. And I think there were some rather explicit lyrics
basically
there.
Basically, the claim is that he had sex with her.
Yes. Yeah. And that it was he who made her famous. Mm-hmm. Basically, that was the claim. And then Taylor Swift came out to publicly rebuke Kanye West. And Kanye West defended what he did. And shortly after that, I think it was Kim Kardashian who released recordings of conversations Taylor Swift had with Kanye, where it proves that Taylor Swift knew about the lyrics and she sort of gave her consent to those lyrics being included in the song.
I really appreciate you telling me about it. That's really nice.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I just had a responsibility to you as a friend, you know. And, I mean, thanks for being, like, so cool about it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Like, the heads up is so nice.
That was an example of a receipt.
Yeah, and then Taylor released her response to everything.
Oh, God, yes. Taylor's response to that, which is the now viral, now famous, Look What You Made Me Do.
Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do.
Cat receipts is a pop culture phenomenon now, right? And it reflects, I guess, a new way in which we resolve situations, and that's textually, right? So because so much of anything now happens via the screen and through these different platforms, memory becomes encapsulated in these platforms and in that human conflict as well. I mean, again, I'm starting to sound like that old uncle who just can't get the new generation, but this is where it's going to go, right? What are your impressions?
Well, I think one of the things I'm still thinking about is before we started talking about this, we had a conversation off air where we talked about how some of our conversations with the people in our lives can be very mundane things. And to what extent then do you keep receipts? Keeping receipts, even the mundane, you keep it and then you use it in a way that is potentially unintended, right? I think what we were talking about was, I'm going to drop by and do some grocery shopping. What do you need? Something as simple as that can later be used as a receipt to say, look how many times I've done the grocery shopping. How many times have you done the grocery shopping?
Yeah.
See how compassionate I am. I ask your, you know, what you want. You don't ask me what I want. The most simple things can be used in very malicious ways.
Yeah, because things happen in a relationship, they change for the better or worse. And if it gets worse, then all these mundane things can be recast in different ways, right? It could be seen as in terms of a power dynamic, in terms of miscommunication, in terms of poor choice of words, when in effect, the reason why you've been able to have those mundane things in the exchange in the first place is because some sort of connection is already established, right?
Yes.
So 10 years from now, I might fall out with somebody and then everything is just colored in a negative light because we have these mundane details that are going to be magnified for various reasons.
Yes, and those conversations sometimes also don't pick up the nuances of our lives, right? What our mental state is. Mm-hmm. Maybe we were upset about something and we needed an outlet. I'm not justifying that that's okay.
Right,
but
right.
It happens. We're all human, right? Yeah. Maybe I was anxious and I said something which I didn't mean to say. Or at that particular time, I was vulnerable. I might have been needy. Or I could have just been distracted and I really wasn't paying attention to the kind of words I was using. Yeah. This happens to me often, mm-hmm. right? And I have very poor choice of words sometimes. So if I'm going to have those conversations reflect back on me as the kind of person I am or how I treated another person, I don't think that's entirely fair.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, there's a context that is pretty much omitted in all this, right? So when I saw Kim Kardashian's defense of her husband, right, and the immediate thing that comes to mind is typically context. What was going on? How did the conversation go? What happened after the exchange? You know, I know enough cases too where people have struggled with this, couple have struggled with this, where everything is frozen in that moment. Mm. Everything is frozen in that 6-7 lines, you know, that nothing else seems to matter, right? And that's become the kind of discursive culture that digital media is giving us, you know. We want certainty at the price of background, at the price of mood, you know, without considering, like you said, the human element of what communication typically entails, you know.
Yeah. But let's just go back and ask another very important question, I think. Why would you record conversations in the first place?
Yeah.
Right. I can understand why Kim Kardashian or Kanye West recorded that conversation with Taylor Swift. They probably had a lawyer advise them. They probably had really good mm-hmm. legal reasons to do it. I understand that. But you and I, in our lives, which is fairly mundane, we're not Taylor Swift or mm-hmm. Kim Kardashian or Kanye, what reason do we have to record our conversations? What reasons do we have to keep all these conversations, to save every mm-hmm. WhatsApp exchange or whatever it is? What reason do we have?
Okay, so I thought about this and the first immediate answer came to mind was that it's just built in the settings. So typically, Google Drive would sync with the phone for Androids and it would pretty much save most of the data. Of course, you can change it, but that would go beyond the default setting. So you would have to do a little bit more work to just say you don't want to save the stuff. And typically, that's what I do because I don't want unnecessary storage. I've heard, too, of sentimental reasons for saving conversations. The first is the day before you leave a country or something like that after a long vacation and you want to, you know, just tell your hosts or your friends at that place, you know, what a good time you've had. It's not unlike saving a photo, right? So the counter argument would be that to say, look, we cherish photos. Why can't we save conversations in the same way? It seems like a fair analogy to make because sometimes, not sometimes anymore, a lot of the times, the conversations we have online aren't frivolous anymore because so much of it happens on it, right? So I get it that it's odd that people would save these things, but when I think of the kind of culture of tokenizing things, whether it's through Instagram or whether it's through other things, you know, Facebook reminding you of something that happened 5 years ago or whatever, it's part of that. Saving even conversations now is part of the memorabilia way of, you know, recollecting or cherishing moments online, you know. So that comes to mind.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I can think about also is notions of collective safety, right? I've seen I've seen this being done where people have very unsafe conversations or threats have been made on dating apps or even other forms of social media. And this happens, I've seen it happen particularly between men and women, and the women would then post these conversations or even a picture of the person they had the conversation with as a potential warning to other women to be aware of these kinds of things. So those I can understand.
Yeah.
But I think we also have to consider the more sinister element of that, where you use it against people in more malicious ways.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see how that could be unintended or retrospective too, because why wouldn't, let's just say you have a relationship, it doesn't work out, why wouldn't you just go through the text you had, right? Just to know what sort of things happen. But then that made me wonder, like, how did people resolve issues before this? You know, because now we're so set into thinking, well, there's evidence in the phone, there's evidence in the emails, let's look at that. But before that, how did people do it? Anyway, maybe we can talk about that in the second part of the show. But let's take a break for now. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9.
For all the girls that get dick from Kanye West, if you see him in the streets, give him Kanye's best. Why? They mad they ain't famous.
Check it once, then I check it twice. Oh. BFM 89.9, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and you're listening to Digital Desire, where we explore new issues of human connection and intimacy in our age of digital screens, where communication has pretty much been taken over by technology. One of the outcomes of that is the phenomenon of kept receipts, or show me your receipts. That's the phrasing that's pretty much normalized now. In the first part of the show, we look at some examples, including Kanye and Taylor Swift's rift. And we ended the episode with the question of, well, how important is this, right? Didn't we manage to solve conflict and misunderstanding without looking at transcriptions, right?
No, but previously, I suppose you had hard copies of photographs.
Yeah.
I mean, think of all the films we've watched where you set out a private investigator.
Yeah, but that's so uncommon, right?
Like, is it really uncommon?
To send, to my knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I suppose the other thing would be letters. People kept letters.
That's true. Right? How could you say that to me 5 years ago? You used this word, you know. Yeah, you're right.
I've also known people where, you know, they already realized that they were nearing the dead end of a relationship, and they just wanted, maybe out of spite, maybe out of, you know, hurt or whatever it is, to record conversations. They actually go into, like, you know, with tape recorders and record conversations. And we all, you know, have read enough spy stories to know that there were hidden mics, hidden cameras, you know, different things, right? Yeah. So it's not a new phenomenon.
Right, right. I guess if you put it that way, what is new, I think, is the normalization of it, I think.
Yes.
Whereas I think back then it would be weird for you to say that you're recording a conversation on the phone, right?
Or that potentially any conversation is, all conversation is recorded.
Yeah.
Like in the scenarios that we had, okay, aside from letters, which could be, you know, it's neutral, it could be good, could be bad.
Yeah, and infrequent for the most part.
Yes. Yeah. Same with photographs. The other examples would be already when you're looking for bad evidence or evidence of bad wrongdoing, right? Whereas what we're looking at now is that anything and everything is kept.
Yeah.
And how it can be used, it goes both ways.
Yeah. And it's really strange and quite unsettling to me now that any relationship I walk into, whether it's, never mind a romantic relationship, even a work relationship, will have this trail of exchanges that can be possibly used to harm either party, right? One party against the other, or, you know, vice versa. So, and it's, and I don't know, maybe it's just me overthinking it, but it seems to be the default assumption that we're going to have whenever we make new connections, right? That a lot of it is going to happen online and a lot of it is going to be kept as receipts.
So I'm now thinking from the other side. So I'm going to start, I'm going to now behave in all my relationships knowing that all these conversations are kept, am I then going to position myself in a certain way?
Yeah.
Am I going to watch everything I say and type? Am I going to filter everything I, you know, communicate, knowing that this is potentially going to happen?
Yeah.
And then in doing that, am I going to present a side of myself which is false?
Mm-hmm. I think
aside from the fact that it's going to be lying to the other person, it's also detrimental to my own mental health because it's not my true self.
And it's not going to help that reconnection, that relationship, right? Because both sides are so shielded or self-shielding or self-regulating.
Yes. And then how authentic then would that relationship be?
Yeah, because there's a good advantage in knowing that person's true side immediately. Then you can decide, all right, this guy's a bit weird. All right, this guy's a bit crude or crass. Then I can decide there and then, early on, whether I want to continue or not. But if everybody's a gentleman in the beginning, then...
This is like psychopathic behavior. I'm thinking
Jeffrey
Dahmer.
Right? You're basically becoming antisocial in that sense, right? In the sense that your true self has to be so regulated as to like only show the residue of, you know, quote-unquote social acceptability, right? What that means, we don't even know because it's not even social. It's already digital now.
Yeah. And also, I think perhaps we've seen through history that when you present yourself an inauthentic good side, which is not normal, we are human and we all have the good, the bad, for lack of better words, right? I'm not to be judging or moralizing.
Sure, sure, sure.
And the undesirable parts of ourselves will try and emerge in some way or another. And that's how people become erotic. That's how people engage in very risky, dangerous behaviors and all kinds of nasty things happen.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a broader phenomenon here in that we have been really hooked and by the promise that a lot of social media and communication technology gives and brings. And that is the promise of, like, perfect memory, right? I mean, there's a famous Black Mirror episode about this. And it projects into this future scenario where we are obsessed with the minutiae of everything that happens. I don't know necessarily if that episode did it justice, right? But the idea here is that it becomes a form of power over the relationship, you know, because everything is not only documented, but rendered new meaning every time a recollection happens, right?
But that's how memory works anyway. We all remember things differently based on our emotional state at that point, where we are, understanding a lot more about ourselves,
but
lives.
I think there's a lot more room to reflect on the fragility of memory and the fragility of feelings in general when we don't have this tendency to hook onto evidence so much. Because I feel that now is becoming a culture of archiving feelings, you know, and feelings are fluid and complicated and weird and scary because we don't have that claw over it. But, you know, technology is saying you should remember what this meant because this is what you felt. But we know we don't access feelings like we access a picture, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And feelings, like you said, are fluid, so they change. So I might have been happy at that particular time, and now thinking back on it, because of what I know now and who I am as a person, I might be upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that might upset me in different ways because I thought I had a happy childhood, but I don't have any more.
Yeah.
And that's going to set off a whole stream of different things, right? And it makes you look at your past in a different way as well. And that's good because it really helps in developing ourselves, developing our skills, developing, you know, a whole bunch of different psychological aspects of ourselves. So if we lose that, then how are we, again, coming back to the question, how do we evolve as people?
Yeah, yeah. Because part of evolving is seeing, you know, how you've changed. It's not always pleasant to think how you've changed because a lot of things maybe were painful and stuff like that. But you need that. You need to construct that narrative to sort of know yourself. But it's hard when we're always faced with the photo of that moment, the text of that moment.
So we're forced to remember it in a certain way and only that way.
Only that way. Or it maybe highlights things that might not be necessarily helpful either, right? Because there's a virtue in forgetting too, I feel.
Yes,
and we're losing we're losing that appreciation of just letting things pass and disappear from our emotional radar, you know, because the idea here is the more you remember and acquire, the more empowered you are, but only to the certain extent that you are in control, but of what, right? But it's changing the narrative of relationships now in that, you know, people are relating to their past through these moments, right?
Fair enough. Yeah. So then do I base any relationship? Just say I'm getting into a new relationship. Do I project who I am? Do I reflect who I am? Or do I reflect who I was through the memory of these past relationships?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I project something I want for myself in the future?
Yeah. I don't know.
And I suppose this is where we got, you know, we have our Instagram profiles, our Facebook profiles, our all these kinds of things, right? What our partner said about us in our last relationship and who we want to be. And I don't know. It sounds like it's a minefield.
It's a minefield. And I just, you know, there was something about the spontaneity of character that made a lot of romance, I guess, or friendships memorable, right? In that it's less about, you know, who we appear more than just what we're like. I mean, I'm trying to find the words for it, but
It's more about who we are rather than who we
show,
what we appear to be.
Yeah, what we appear, in a sense that, like, nowadays we know a person through, you know, the personality they curate on these platforms. Whereas back then, you know, it's, you know, the lot more conversation, a lot more activity. There's a lot more character in a sense that it's less about that pre-programming. You know, it's more about
And it's
being
not
in
about the next Instagram shot.
It's not about the next Instagram shot.
It is,
you know,
about imperfections.
Yeah.
It is about the cracks that we show.
Yeah. And it's not about remembering all of them either. Mm. It's just sort of just... and I guess this is interesting, right? Because we're trying to really pin, you know, characterize what, you know, interactions were like then as opposed to now, where everything's so hardened in these documents, right? Back then... there was something about being in a moment with that person that gave that energy. So if I'm hanging out with you, that energy is not going to be like me hanging out with person B or C. Because that's just the combination of our dynamic. Whereas online, it's so blurry because everybody is like trying to look the same, trying to share the same status about the same grief over this event. There's so much about uniformity in these platforms that really, to me, is a big leap from the kind of, you know, affective dimension of just being with another person. You know? I don't know if the words are coming out right, but...
So I think what I'm gathering is that a lot of these online interactions, you're saying, are a bit more two-dimensional.
It's not two-dimensional.
And it's a bit more like... You can... There is no individuality. There is no personality.
It takes a lot more time and effort to get there.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas with face-to-face interactions, where you are able to just not think about how you're going to Instagram things or how you're going to record this later.
Although now, even now, face-to-face conversation isn't that big a leap from online communication, because you meet a person you probably met online before, and that there's that comparison that's just going to happen inevitably.
Correct.
And for right or wrong.
Yes,
right?
You know, you either expect the face-to-face conversation to be an extension of that online interaction, and therefore it never goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
Or you meet this person and that online interaction helps you leapboard into something that's deeper and richer fuller.
Or,
so it could go one of two ways.
Or there's a blendable in the sense that you're talking about the status you shared, who likes your photo, right? So it's so wedded together now.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard to think of...
And so the difference between those two interactions would be the nuances.
Yeah.
Right? Where if I'm going to meet you face-to-face, I am taking all these interactions as something that's new and novel and in and of itself, rather than how am I going to record this?
Yeah.
How am I going to make sure I have a receipt of this?
Correct, correct.
And I don't have to watch myself. I allow my nuance. I allow my personality, my individuality, my neuroses, those things to come and play and enrich the interaction and relationship.
Although nowadays too, the digital aspect of connections, they're colonizing that as well, in that you have to take a photograph of that moment, show that we're all hanging out. Yeah.
So I mean, it doesn't happen. It never happened unless it's been photographed.
Yeah, then. Yeah. Photo, it didn't happen, right? That's the thing. Pic, it didn't happen. So, but I do think that it's sort of like, the way I think about it is that when you are with, every person has their own rhythm almost. And, you know, that there is that rhythm that, I mean, we take it for granted now. We didn't think of it then, because that was what we had more, you know, most. With just that presence, and the person would add to that dynamic and stuff like that. And I just feel that with the way in which, you know, social media is, A, it used to colonize our personality. Now it's colonizing our interactions as well, right? So that's that extra step where this has to be answered on the core of social media, you know? So it doesn't have a life of its own, you know? Yeah, so it's not as if that we can run away to real life interaction as if it's an alternative. No, it's sort of going to be absorbed in this as well, right? And that I think is a tragedy, in that we have no choice now.
Yeah.
Right? We have no choice, unfortunately.
So for final words, kept receipts, what do you think?
Kept receipts. Well, in a lot of ways, it's inevitable, because even GChats now automatically save themselves. And WhatsApp pretty much does the same thing without, you know, without you thinking. I mean, unless you're actively deleting, you know, which... So,
but even if you delete, once it's out there, does it ever go away?
Well, I think you...
There's always some way to retrieve it.
Should it go to court, you can subpoena Maxis or whatever. I think it has happened before, but it's there. And that's why, I mean, the word colonize just came up, but it's adequate to describe what's happening, in the sense that these gadgets, these little items, are really dictating how we communicate, and the range of choices, or the room to opt out, is much smaller, sounds like. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on this. I think when I'm still on, I understand it's inevitable that a lot of like what you said, a lot of the apps we use have already a built-in a built-in function to save all our conversations.
Yeah, Facebook Messenger as well. Yeah.
And that makes me weary of this, right? Not because I want to have mean conversations with people, but because I really don't know how these conversations, when they're taken out of context, when they're taken out of without the nuances, how they stand. Yeah. What value do they have?
I remember back in the day, well, you know, when we were not so caught by this net of hyper documentation, whenever there was a dispute, there was a lot of trust in the connection that the dispute can happen.
Yes,
because the idea that conflict is worth it presumes that the two people involved, or more than two, recognize each other's integrity enough that a conversation about the conflict can happen. And I'm appealing to your sense of dignity or integrity and character, rather than these texts and documents.
Yeah, I think you've put it better than I could have. What I was going to say was that I hope the kind of relationships where if I've done something wrong, people can just point it out to me without dredging up all this evidence. Hey, look what you did.
Yeah.
You know, here's the evidence.
That's what the police does. When they interrogate you, here's the evidence. You know, what do you have to say about
confess,
this?
Confess.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's the thing, right? Like, the kind of hyper-documentation is a form of surveillance. But rather than surveilling crime, we're surveilling feelings at the very minutiae, every word that's used, every emoji that's accompanying that word, right? So, and that's sad, because we're now surveilling each other.
Yeah.
Right.
So then our caution would be not that, okay, so you can't avoid it unless you, like you said, you know, take the extra step to go and...
to actively delete. And there's not time
for
that.
Or change the settings or whatever it is. If we are not doing that, then at least be a bit more responsible in how we handle the kinds of conversations that we have, because people have those conversations with us because they trust us.
Yeah.
Or there's some element of trust in that relationship.
Yeah.
And I think... I think the mature thing to do would be to, as much as we want to say, here's the evidence and here's what we did, to try and transcend that and have like real conversations.
Yeah, yeah. I think to recognize the stickiness of, you know, being a person with feelings, you know, especially with
a complex, complicated human beings, basically.
Especially in a mode that is as elusive as the smartphone, right? We think it's so private when so much of our data belongs to these corporations now anyway, you know? So so I think that's the first thing we have to keep in mind, that this realm of so-called intimate exchange is not totally secure or it's intimate or, you know, that safe, right? So having an alternative to that, you know, creating memories of being in the flesh, creating memories of actual things done together, I think is very important. So all right, well,
that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Join us again 2 Wednesdays from now as Fuad and I look at how social media, screens and digital media affect us, our relationships, our development of ourselves and our psychology and all those things. Until then, I'm Visla Kumarisen.
I'm Ahmad Fatrahmat.
And you've been listening to Digital Desires on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.